Shop Maniacs. You're listening to another episode of Shop Talk Show, Summer Heat Edition. I'm Dave, Suns Out, Guns Out. Rupert with me is Chris, tank top with nipple rings. Yeah. Ooh, looking good, yeah. Chris.
Oh,
looking
thank good. You. Thank you. Thank you. I'm trying. Not very hard, but, you know, working out again when I can, how I can, safely, you know. Just got to fix that eating thing, you know. To me, the working out is the easy part. It's the...
Can I tell you my new diet?
Yeah.
You ready for it? Sleeping. That's my new diet.
Can't eat when you sleep, can you, buddy?
Ah, joke's on you, appetite. joke's on you, eating out of boredom. So I read this book, Why We Sleep. My coworker Trent read it and was just talked about it so much. I just was like, okay, well, I'm going to read it. The TLDR is anything less than 8 hours of sleep is trying to kill you. That's the whole premise of the whole book. I don't think I spoiled it for anybody, but it's done by this neuroscientist who does a bunch of sleep studies and stuff. And okay. In some ways it's like, in some ways it's kind of like this cure all sleep. It repairs your brain. It fights cancer. It does all these things, you know, like, so take it with a grain of salt, but an appropriate amount of salt, but the core premise is like, sleep is very important to the body, you know, and we are in an industry where sleep is not so much valued. We are in an American society where sleep is not so much value. We are in a global pandemic where your brain does not let you sleep or whatever. So like it struck me pretty good in this idea that I just maybe need to sleep. Like, as much as I love, you know, playing video games or, you know, staying up late, whatever, picking my nose, watching Netflix, like the idea is sleep is like where your body actually does very critical systems repairs, defragging your whole brain, basically. So my new diet, I think, is I'm just going to try to sleep, get 8 hours of sleep and see what that does. That's my new 2020.
So. You're going to hit that 8 hours. Are you going to measure it? Have you seen the new watt? No, it's a ring. The ring I was impressed with.
Oh,
I forget what it's called.
Sleep ring?
Just because who wants, I don't know about you, but who wants to wear a watch all night long to track it? And then when do you charge it then? You charge it during the day? Well, the day, presumably, it's doing something even more useful. I just think the ring is kind of cool, and then it's a little more chill, and you get the data or whatever.
I think my strategy is just like, and I didn't do it last night, but, you know, in bed by 10, reading a book or something, and I fall asleep to my Kindle, almost like I have a Pavlovian response built into my brain now. So I open the Kindle, get 1.5 pages in, and I fall asleep. So
yeah, don't exactly make much progress on the old book, huh?
No, but that's, yeah, can't read books from the library, I found out, because I sleep too much. So I have to, the 3-week time limit from the library does not work out. So I have to buy books.
I have a stack of 5 of them on my bedstand that I can't seem to get through for the same reason. Even TV, this is, you know, not, I'm a little bit not in the same category as a lot of the rest of the world, because sleeping is a little bit of my superpower. Like, I just get the right number every day, no matter what. Every 6 months, I might have a night where I can't sleep, and I can usually point to exactly why. It's some literal life stressor or something that's just like, well, obviously. But even TV, I've been trying to watch the show Cursed on Netflix, which is like this cool, like, I don't know, Sword in the Stone remake kind of thing. And I'll watch like 5 minutes of it, and I'm just like... I'm like, come on, I want to watch this show. Like, I don't even have the choice. If I'm just like, you know what, I'm really into this video game, I'm going to play it tonight instead of sleep, my body's like, no, you're not.
You're not. I'm just going to fall asleep.
I'm very lucky that way. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you got it. My wife has it, just the ability to harness sleep. Unfortunately, my brain chemistry does not allow that. My brain chemistry is like, let's start a project or let's work out at night or something. I don't know. Which is like all the terrible things you can do, or I'll just catch up. I'll just not sleep for the whole week and then I'll catch up, you know? And apparently your brain doesn't do that. It just like doesn't actually catch up, you know, anyway, it's interesting to think about. Speaking of books, I've read quite a few books this year. But I'm thinking my next, what I want to do is I want to read and I've opened them, but like I want to finish and read like all my friends' books, because I have a lot of friends who have written books here through web design and stuff, and I want to read all those. That's kind of my new goal, but I just need to I just need to dig into it, you know.
What do you have? What's your next? Do you have one on the stack that you haven't read yet?
Well, I want Jerry McGovern's book, Worldwide Waste. I want to really dig into that. I want to dig into that. There's like a few, like a book apart books that are coming out or have come out that I want to read. Like David Dylan Thomas has a new book coming out.
We'll get him. We'll try anyway.
Yeah, we'll try. But Sonongo's book, I read like 3/4 of it. I just need to finish it, you know, stuff like that. So there's quite a few of those, you know.
I chatted with Amy Butcher the other day, who has a new one called Designing for Behavior Change that I'm hoping to get her on the show about, which is fascinating, because I just, even the name of it, I have 10 questions, you know. I'm like, but so I have the book. I ordered it. I ordered it in paper, because I'm just weird like that. But it just came today, so that's mine on the stack to read.
Is it a book apart?
No, it's Rosenfeld.
Those are good. Yeah, well, so another one is like Kevin Hoffman. He has a meeting design book.
I bought it too. I bought two books. They came together, those two. Well, I'm just fascinated by that. I mean, I have a bunch of meetings, and the position I'm at in life is that I, like it or not, I probably should have some say in how those meetings operate, you know, like I'm kind of the boss. I tend to be in the meetings that I'm in, like it or not, self. So if the meeting is bad, there's no one to pass the buck to. I can't point to somebody and be like, that was a bad meeting. Why was that a bad meeting? Because the only person to point to is myself. So,
you know, and I'm thinking about that book, and specifically with all the corona, like all the meetings are distributed now, you know, all like, and there's a lot more kind of just over Skype and stuff like that. So I think you, like in a bad meeting over video or what, video chat, Slack is very bad. So like, how do you do a good one is kind of my big thing. And Happy Cog and Kevin were always very good at that process, that like, you know, I guess they still are, they're still a company, but very good at the process of like, let's sit around, talk and extract the good idea. So I'm kind of curious to figure that out.
I love it too. I'm starting to be opinionated about kind of Zoom procedure too. And one little thing I've been honing in on is that I really think that there should be kind of a Zoom leader on every Zoom call, who's kind of like ultra engaged and making sure it's on target and that the people in the meeting are like appropriately engaged. Because I think it's really easy to check out on them, and I think, I don't know, that just it, like sometimes when there is no leader, the thing, it just kind of falls apart. They take longer and nobody knows. There's like weird chunks of silence. That's like, who's going to kind of shepherd this along to the next session? Well, I don't know. It's nobody's meeting, so we'll just see what happens. And I don't know.
Yeah. Groove Dog is not like a good business strategy, you know, like, historically, Groove Dogs are not known for their business acumen. So it's kind of it's very hard in Zoom land to let the spirit guide you, man.
Right.
Like, we'll just get to it. We'll just Groove Dog it out and figure out what's going on.
I got some of it from some like techie things I've been in, but more so from my banjo class that I still do over Zoom, where there's clearly a leader, and the leader, you know, then there's even breakout rooms. Have you seen that in Zoom? It's kind of a cool concept. It's like you can have a little, like if there's a lot of people in a call, the owner of the call can make a breakout room that's optional, and they assign people to it. So in this case, it's like there's a breakout room for guitar and fiddle and banjo and stuff. So we all start together. Then people bust out to their breakout room by instrument and do stuff there and then come back to the main room. That's probably not useful in a, like a tiny little company call, but it's good to know that Zoom has that feature, like little mini conferences within a conference call kind of thing. So you can bust out into a breakout room without like leaving the parent call.
That's cool. I've seen that on some of these online conferences I've attended, like Jamstack had a conference online. I forget the name of the software they used, but they had a little, you know, little sessions, hallway sessions, they call them, you know, where you could kind of just go and talk about whatever niche Jamstack thing you wanted. So I think that's kind of critical too, especially if your company's kind of just online all day or whatever, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Discord, this other thing that accused. Oh gosh, hold on
for that.
We got to get to the Discord thing, but for real quick on the. Oh gosh, now I've lost it. We might as well talk about Discord now. So I have this like shame in that we used to pre-pandemic, we had a nice little JavaScript going here in Bend, Oregon, Bend.js. I don't think it's dead. It's just that like it's a little hard to keep momentum of that stuff in the pandemic. You know, it was an in-person meetup group.
In-person meetups are fragile anyways. So
right. And I'm terrible, but I'm like, if we're going to do this thing over Zoom, I'm kind of not interested. I hate to say that, but like I'm on Zoom all the time and I have, you know, I get the Zoom fatigue thing too. Actually, that's the thing I was thinking of is that I think in a lot of calls, like encouraging a more camera off thing is like, okay, because I know some people get stressed having the camera on them. I think whether you know it or not, there's a little extra stress for a call when you have the camera on, and I don't care. Like sometimes I care, but for the person I've had the third call with today, like just turn it off. Like it doesn't matter to me if it's on. And if it reduces your stress, I want you to have it off because then you can focus better. I don't know. Anyway, so there's that.
I could talk about that too. I had a meeting and it was like, you know, one person was like, you know, I'm feeling like a lack of connection, which is totally fine. You know, and like, you know, one of the solutions was maybe we could turn on video cameras, but then I'm like, no, like it, that's just purely from my like bitter spirit of like,
you know, so most of your calls are video off?
Video off. Yeah. We started that at Paravel. I mean, we're remote for 10, 12 years, 13 years now. Yeah. And so we've just kind of been, partly for bandwidth reasons in the early days, but just more so like, you know, we know what each other look like. And so that's part of it. But like, we don't depend on that per se, you know, and it's a little weird now to have that. But I like that hybrid thing, like when everyone's filing in, you do video on, and then you kind of say like, okay, we're going to get started. Again, back to meeting design, we're going to get started. Everyone turn off your camera. We'll save bandwidth. Like,
yeah, let's go,
you know,
eliminate some world wide web waste, whatever.
Or even just like, okay, cool, we saw everybody. Let's focus on the one person sharing their screen or something like that. Yeah, you know, let's have a filter in the meeting room thing. But then when we get there, now we're looking at one screen. So
this episode of Shop Talk Show is brought to you in part by Jetpack, the WordPress plugin that brings all kinds of power to your WordPress site. You know, I had a meeting with somebody this morning. I was kind of helping them out with their site. I didn't even know what kind of site it was. Happened to be a WordPress site. They are an entrepreneur. They have installed a ton of plugins on this site, basically so they could build the site with a ton of control without ever touching the code, you know, which is like a possible thing in WordPress. They picked like a nice looking theme that was based on Genesis, and then they added like advanced custom fields to it. And then they had Elementor on top of that, which is like a drag and drop page builder thing. There was a lot going on in there. And I was kind of auditing their plugins. Largely, it was kind of fine, you know, like the end result was like, and they were super effective and did all the stuff they wanted to do. So, you know, as much as I was like, wow, there's a lot going on in here, it did the trick, right? Jetpack was not in there, but I noticed a bunch of things, okay? One of them was they had like 11 of them that needed an update. And I'm like, you know what? You can update these plugins. It's fine. It's all good. So like, update the plugins. But even easier, why don't you install Jetpack, turn on auto updates for them, and just have it do it for you. Just one less thing that you have to worry about. Two is, I looked at some of their stuff from coming in from their contact form, and it was full of spam and stuff. So we were looking at that, but it got me nervous about security. I was like, you know what? If we had Jetpack on there too, we can up the security level of the site, and that will feel good. Another one was, I was asking about backups, and she's like, well, one time there I did lose everything, and I had to, you know, call my host crying and deal with that. And I was like, holy cow, that's bad. Like, let's get backups going so we can have Jetpack do that as well. And then as we were going through some of her other technical stuff she wanted to do, she thought that the images were too big and too heavy on her site. And I'm like, yet another thing that I really wish you didn't have to worry about, that technology could just deal with for you. Of course, Jetpack has this, you know, previously called Photon. It's basically a CDN for your images that serves them in the right format and optimized and all that. It's got that too. And these are all things you just install and you just flip on. Flip, 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 flip. It just solved a ton of issues like immediately, you know? And, you know, in her, she had this opinion that like, oh, Jetpack adds this bloat. And I'm like, it's exactly the opposite. It's taking away a bunch of bloat from you. Anyway, it was a good use case for Jetpack. So I thought I'd share that.
But anyway, Discord.
Well, yeah, the reason I had brought up Ben.js is because originally when I kind of like were kicking this thing off and kind of reevaluating, you know, the group existed for a while and it already had a Discord. And I never used Discord. I didn't at the time. And I was like, oh, like, I hate to be a whiner, but like, I don't like this as much. And all of my stuff, especially stuff that has anything to do with work, is already all in Slack, and I like Slack, and I think it has good UI for this kind of stuff. And like, I just I know my own behavior, and then I'm not going to have an extra app open all day long because of a very low volume single meetup group that happens to be in Discord. So I just kind of, you know, I think I influenced it towards Slack, and now the group has moved to Slack, and I think it was a positive move. But I think to myself back then, and I was like, I shouldn't have done that probably. Like, I don't know. All I did was vote. It's not like I forced it down anybody's throat. But now all of a sudden I'm playing my video game. And, you know, I have a little Chris's Mud update, by the way, which I think is kind of fun. I'm still playing this game. It's so dang fun. But anyway, it's got a Discord. And then I'm involved, you know, once you're in one video, because Discord is like chat for video games, but not really, right? Like, it started there and I think that's a big market, but really it's just like Slack. It's just a chat client, you know?
Yeah, it was kind of like a hangout, like a voice app for gaming, like with your little squad, me and the boys or me and the girls gonna game but be in the same chat room. So like, is it like a competitor? Like, people would use Skype or something before, but that was just kind of bad. So like, they started Discord, but now it's kind of grown. It's still kind of gamery, but it has this concept of a server, which is like a Slack room or like a Slack instance. And then in the servers, you have channels, but then you have these special like audio channels or video channel.
They're literally called channels. Voice channels, right?
Voice channels. So like, everyone can hop into a voice channel for whatever Monday stand up and like everyone hops in Monday stand up and you're talking instantly. So it's kind of, it's different. It's not like you join a call. It's like you join a channel and that's how you join a call. So.
Right. But I'd say in the grand scheme of things, it's not that different than Slack.
1% different.
Yeah. It's really pretty similar. And I like it. I like the UI. I think it's just super well done. It's fast. It's just good. And so now I'm on it because video games and like an odd Patreon here and there. And now I'm kind of like, oh, I almost wish more stuff was on my Discord now. So maybe we'll have to do a Shop Talk one at some point.
Shop Talk Discord, we could. The Patreon thing is very cool because it can integrate, you know, and if you're like community supported, which we're not, we're ad supported. But maybe we could go community supported. You know, you pay $5 a month, you get into a special tier, and that gets you access to certain channels, like gated content, basically, like kind of the dream. Like, you know, oh, you want to be a platinum member, like, cool, you get like the Chris and Dave channel, you know, it costs $100 a month. There's, I'm just throwing numbers out.
Yeah, that's a real thing though.
Like, we'll hang out with you in a channel for $100 a month. That sounds terrible.
Yeah.
But like, that's my own uncomfortability. If you do that, that's cool. If like you pay for that, that's cool. It's my own uncomfortability there. But I have a few.
Well, we could figure out a way that's more comfortable, probably. I mean, we're not committing to anything right now on the show, but I'm just saying I'm into it. So there's this, you know, there's like a guy who's like really good at, he knows a lot about training in this video game. And it's a big deal part of this, right? Because like, as you level up in the game, you need to make decisions about how you're going to train. And it's like, it's kind of not trivial to screw it up, you know, like it's possible to fix it, but it can take a long time or it can cost money. Because you can literally have to buy a retraining if you screw it up, kind of thing. But anyway, he just happens to know, and he's a nice guy. So you join his Patreon. He's got his own server. Now I'm in there. I'm literally paying a guy $20 a month just to be in the Discord because I might have questions about training. And then he has, you know, it's not like forced, like he must answer those questions, but I think he gets a kick out of it anyway. So you generally get the answers you're looking for out of the Discord. And I think that's cool.
Well, and in some ways, that's like a guitar lesson. You're paying $5 a week for like a guitar lesson, like having access to a guitar teacher or something. Like it just seems, that economy seems so very cool to me. Just like, hey, like hop in here. We'll help you with like, this is what I talk about. Like if you like that, pay money. And like that helps me talk about it more. And so that's cool.
So now I'm all into Discord.
Now you're into Discord, man. Yeah, we'll shoot.
Cool. Yeah.
It's good. I know the Vue core team uses it, like quite a few, you know.
Right.
Like open source projects are pivoting over to it. So
yeah, the everything about it is cool pretty much. So I'm playing the game. I know nobody cares, but I'm gonna try to relate this to tech as much as I can. This is a tech story anyway.
This is the hottest topic on the podcast. This like this era will be known as Chris goes whatever Ruby mud.
Yeah, well, it's just really fun still. Anyway, so the game connects over like HTTP, you know, like it's just text based. So there's just information streaming over networks. And remember, I mentioned like, oh my God, I would love to make an app for this because the clients that exist for it now are just gnarly. They're just old. They look stupid and gross. And, you know, they just have some momentum because they're old and they're kind of company supported. But there has been plenty of open source movements to like make cooler ones. I think I mentioned that like Ruby based one that turns your terminal into a client or whatever. That's pretty neat and stuff. But I was like, oh, maybe I'll do it in some other way that where I can leverage my existing skills a little better because, you know, I'm kind of a CSS guy, you know, like, wouldn't it be cool to make a web one? But then I was like, oh, maybe I'll try Flutter because it's so cross-platform. And anyway, I'm just thinking more and more about it. And what I do is I just like mind map it all. I like write down all my thoughts. Like, what would a good client be? What do these other clients do that are their strengths and weaknesses and yada, yada. I'm like got a little too into it. And then I'm looking around and starting to ask people, I'm like, what's the appetite for this? You know, like amongst the player base, is there people, are people hungry for another client? Like if I could show you what a cool client could be, would you be into it? And that's like mediocre in that respect, but there was enough interest that I was like, oh, maybe. And that led me to find another guy. It happened to be a guy, could be anybody, who's already kind of was working on it, you know? And then I know this other guy too, who's like into the command line stuff, and he's a Mac guy. So we talk once in a while, because most people that play this game aren't Mac people for whatever reason. You know, I think the Windows client traditionally was so much better that they got that going. But he had already kicked off making an app, and he chose for it Electron to do it, which was, I thought, was an interesting choice. Like, I've never made an Electron app, but I'm aware of it, right? Because it's a way to like basically wrap your web app that you just use HTML, CSS, and JavaScript, you know, and then you get a native app out of it. But it's still a hybrid app. It's still an app that you double click on your Windows machine or your Mac machine or your Linux machine, and it opens up and it looks like an app, but the guts of it is just a web view. So it's literally divs and CSS and stuff. That's different from obviously a native app, but even Flutter, it compiles to like native, you know, there's no divs in there. So Electron is still that. And Electron gets crapped on a lot. Do you remember why exactly? I think some of it is like, well, you don't get a it doesn't look like a native button because it's not a native button.
Yeah, it doesn't, like, you know, Apple snobs, John Grubers of the world, feel like it's not native. There are some performance things, like it's a Chrome shell, basically. It's an instance of Chrome that, you know, is memory intensive, you know, with all the problems that Chrome has, you know, from eating memory. Now you have a sandbox environment where I guess where it's like it's in its own like instance, but you know, you can do terrible stuff with JavaScript inside. I think that's it. You can do terrible stuff with JavaScript and make a bad performing web app. So anyone can do that. So
yeah, you can. And yeah, there's some memory issues, right? And
so at work, this, you know, like we have Slack and Teams and, you know, VS Code and all of those are in Notion and all of those are basically Electron apps, right? Like, I mean, they're all kind of web apps, I think, under the hood. And all of those, you know, like you're using your computer, your fans just start spinning up. And my coworkers are on like 5-year-old iMacs and they're like looking to replace those because they're just like, man, I can't even do my job without my computer screaming at me. So,
yeah.
You just,
so like, it's a thing.
So,
but you still have some control over it. And well, I don't know. I think Slack is famously in it. I don't know. Maybe they've rewritten since then. But like to some degree, the UI consistency of it is a good thing to me. And if you're not doing anything particularly intense, it seems like an extra good choice. Like I'm kind of hot on Electron at the moment. I'm like, this is cool. This is my first project I've hopped to an Electron. And I'm like, this is highly efficient. Or at least like it's a good choice for what we're doing with it, I think.
Yeah. So, I think it's great. I mean, it keeps you in your wheelhouse, you know?
Like, oh, God, big time. Especially because so it's a guy, he's a Linux guy, and he made this choice. So now he's on Linux, and I'm on Mac, and it has irrelevant. It's the same UI, mm-hmm. or it's the same deal. I'm, you know, picking out, and so now I'm like, this concept was for just kind of make it more like a VS Code like experience for this game where it's highly like command line driven. The game's command line driven anyway, so why not make the command line have extra commands in it for like changing themes and doing macros and all, kind of highlighting particular lines of text. It's all these like commands that are additional to it. So I've kind of I'm like, this has really come along a far way, you know, like I'm adding in features to it and I'm making themes that are really cool looking and all this. And it really is in the wheelhouse because it's like the JavaScript, it uses this project called Electron Forge, which like deals with the babelization or whatever about the JavaScript. Mm-hmm. And like, there's this little stuff to do. Like we don't have hot module reloading yet, but it's an open ticket. So somebody will just get to it and fix it. So you can play the game while you're working on the game, which is really fun to me without it refreshing on you. And so it's beautiful. Yeah. I really have all of a sudden I go from, how am I possibly going to do this to having a pretty much working version of this. And now we're, you know, many, many weeks of development into it, looking at a release candidate early. I'm like so excited about it. It's so cool.
Wow.
So it uses some technology, not only Electron, but it uses, for the rendering engine, it uses Mithril. And that was a choice that
Mithril?
He had. Yeah, have you ever?
I have no idea what that does.
I think it's like I'm trying to get a sense of how maintained it is anymore. But it looks kind of good. It looks kind of like you're writing React, but you don't use JSX. You have to like define the components like in another way. So here's the API for everybody listening. It's M parentheses, essentially. Now there's other APIs, but the main one you use is M, you know, for Mithril. And then you give it like div.dave, and that will create a div of class Dave. So you use like query selector all type selectors to create the element. Then the second thing that you pass it is like attributes, like an object of attributes. And then the last thing is some text. And then you can optionally, you know, these are all optional, I think, except for like the first one. Then you pass it an array of children. So there's a lot of M parenthesis open stuff happening. There's like M all over instead of JSX, you know. But I think it has this really strict API, and it's like React in that if you change any data, it just re-renders as minimal amount of the UI as possible. The whole point of it is it's really small, and it does like state-based re-rendering for high efficiency UIs, you know?
Okay.
But I wonder if it was like before React. Like I don't have a good sense of like where this sits in the
chronology.
I think it, you know, but it does compare itself to React and Vue and Angular and stuff, and has better benchmarks. So I think the point of it is like super high performance nerds, but is that still true? I don't know, you know.
Well, hey, what's most important is the name is correct. You know what I mean? Like Mithril is the one you want for your D&D mud, you know.
Oh, I know. Mithril is a magical metal in the game too. It's like the lowest level magical metal, which I think is rad. But it's weird. Well, it's weird right to write choice. A bunch of JavaScript with a framework you've never used before, you know, and it just does nothing but the kind of the UI layer for it. And you even got to kind of re-render sometimes yourself. And it's just funny for me to, you know, I don't know, playing with it. I'd be interested in getting JSX going for it, though, because, you know, JSX is not specific to React necessarily. It's just a syntax that then can have a thing that ports it to whatever framework's style of writing, you know? Mm-hmm. So I haven't got that going yet either. But I was like, can we get SAS going here? Because I think there's enough value that SAS would be useful. And then I'm designing themes for it, but the themes are highly, like we're morphing the themes to be CSS custom property driven, because I think that makes good sense when you say, hey, you can theme this UI, just change these variables is a more like palatable way to theme. Do you think that's kind of, what do you think about that? If you said, hey, here's an app and you can theme it, we're giving you CSS control. Do you want to just be on your own and just do whatever you want? Or do you like the idea of having custom property hooks for lots of stuff?
Like from the app design standpoint. This is confusing. I have mixed emotions here. Like, so you have like, something like Bootstrap. Have you ever used Bootstrap lately? You know, you open the variables.scss, right, and there's 1,000, literally 1,000 global variables, you know? And it's like, hey, you can change all these. And it's like, I don't want to. This is too many. Like, I just want colors.
Yeah, it can be overdone.
And those are at the top. So yeah, it can be overdone. And I think it builds sort of technical debt too, you know. You just allow all this configuration, you know. On my site where I've done experiments with like theming, you know, you're like, oh, I'll just do primary, secondary, and button color, whatever, you know, and that'll solve it. And like, it never does, you know, like every single thing needs a little bit different. Like your button color didn't work as your border color in this situation or something like that, you know, or your link color or something. There are times where it just doesn't work. So I don't, you know, that's where it's tough. You know, maybe if I, but you know, with like maybe a dozen properties or a few dozen properties, you could kind of come up with something good though.
That's my thinking, right? Is that if you at 100, I think is too far. And like, it's not worth doing if there's only three. So there's probably like a hot spot of configurable variables that feels right. And it's tricky. 1,000, you know, is obviously too many. I mean, come on.
You know. Oh, it's just out of control. And some of that, I'd like it to just move to the component level. Cause when you're working on the tabs, you just want all the tab stuff there. You know, I think you could do pretty good work with like a few, you know, but I like how VS Code does it. I don't know if you're going full into the VS Code analogy, but like just JSON is kind of cool. The new Windows Terminal app, you skin it all through JSON and it's pretty cool. Like you can just, you know, specify all your colors through JSON. Like that's kind of powerful, you know, like it's maybe not the UI that people want, but you know, you could build a little one pager that generates the JSON.
I think, and where I want to go with this too, is to have maybe have a little bit more than you'd use. And so every time I declare a variable is to have the fallback there too, if not multiple fallbacks, do the chaining thing a little bit. So that So that, and then instead of just giving you a new theme, having it have all the variables at the top, have more like documentation of what the variables are, and then kind of leave it to you to choose which ones you want to set, because you don't have to set any. In fact, a theme where you set main color to red instead of green should be a dramatic change. Now you have a red theme instead, and you've set one variable, and it's made smart choices for you based on that one variable. But there are 50 things you could set if you wanted to. Like, there's a border between the different areas of the UI. You could set border width to 1, and now they're really thin borders, or border width to 3, and now they're thick borders between it. But or you could set nothing at all, and it'll default to 2 pixels or something. You don't have to do anything. But if you want to, you kind of have the hook. I think that's kind of a interesting idea.
Yeah, it's tough to add theming to stuff. I mean, people, it's tough because it's a poison. It's like the ultimate, like, hey, you can customize this, but then it's the ultimate like technical debt because, hey, now you have to support all these customizations, you know.
I had a dream, like in early when I was fantasizing about this, I opened up Figma and I designed with Figma what I thought the perfect client would be like without any knowing the code base or anything. This is before that. Then I get my hands on this. The first thing I do is build that theme by forcing the existing HTML and CSS and stuff that was there and having my CSS override it all for my theme. And I got it done and it was so cool. I'm like, look at how cool this is. And then I get more involved in the project and I'm like, well, you know, we need to reevaluate this. We need to change this up. We're going to have this bar over here. Now we're changing the HTML. And I'm trying not to be like, well, that's going to mess up my theme. You can't do that. This is, you know, right. like you need to make changes that are based on the good of the project. And then the theme follows along. So little by little, I've been whittling away my theme such that it doesn't do as much custom stuff, that it just kind of sucks in the variables and does as little as possible. I was thinking a project like this with themes, like ideally very little like dramatic overrides of what it's doing. Or if it is overriding something, it's doing it in kind of like a blessed way. That's like, it's like we expect themes to take charge of this if it wants to.
Anyway. Yeah. It might be worth looking at how VS Code does it, you know? I mean, their like workbench dot foo sort of stuff. Wow,
they do everything right. So jealous. Such a good project.
Lots of brains there. Lots of brains.
This episode of Shop Talk Show is brought to you in part by Netlify. Yay, Netlify is the best. You know, a lot of people use Netlify for free. You know, there's like an unlimited number of sites you can put on there. And, you know, the traffic and build minutes and stuff they give you is pretty good, especially for a personal site like mine. You know, it's not that highly trafficked. It'll just be fine on the free plan. But there's all kinds of stuff that makes sense to pay for Netlify for. For me, always a key moment there was when you need to like invite somebody else onto the team, have like a team membership kind of thing of Netlify, invite multiple people on there. The pricing for that was a pretty big jump, and they just announced just recently that it's dropped a ton, which is like, yay, another high five for Netlify. It's down like less than half, I think, to $19 per member for that. So all of a sudden, then you get 3 concurrent builds instead of 1, and you get 4x the bandwidth and 3 times the build minutes. You know, all kinds of stuff jump way up as soon as you have Pro. And then, of course, you know, there are another team member too working with you there. So they have the same level of access to all that Netlify stuff that you do. So it just got a lot cheaper if you need the Pro stuff. I have a bunch of Pro plans on Netlify because they're awesome. And I have, you know, I just like the whole feature set that they offer. It's tempting to just launch into the whole feature set, but we don't have time for that now. If you did that, listen to previous shows or, you know, just go to their website, which is a beautiful website and explains beautifully everything that they do. It is the modern web for modern web builders like us. That's for sure. Thanks so much, Netlify. Bye-bye. All right, what should we do now?
So have you seen these new Windows devices with the foldy screens in the middle, with the little seam in the middle?
I don't know about the other day.
I downloaded Yeah, well, so like there's foldables, like where like you open it and like there's one kind of LED OLED screen that kind of fills the gap, you know, but Microsoft announced like these new devices that where there's a gap in the middle of the page, kind of like a seam basically. So it's actually two panels that are sandwiched together that form kind of one device. And the idea there is you can flip one over and just use it like a newspaper or, you know, flip it on side and you have two screens. Anyway, I'm interested in these purely at like somewhat of the PC fanboy stuff, but then also, you know, I bought an iPad Pro the last year and it's good, but it's not like great. It's sort of like my feelings. And I, the device is very charming and sleek and good hand feel, but like, you know, it's kind of heavy and typing still is bad, you know? So I'm sort of on the lookout for like a solution there. But I'm interested in these kind of dual screen thingies.
Yeah.
And I have no idea, but anyway, so Microsoft has proposed two new CSS features to help with these. And there's this CSS spanning media query. So you can say at media parentheses spanning. And then there's like three options, single fold horizontal, single fold vertical, like the line goes vertical. The fold is vertical or the fold is horizontal. And then default is none. So you can write a media query that responds to these, like basically does the, is there a fold in the middle of the screen?
Yeah, right.
It's weird, but like very cool. And then they have some environment variables now that kind of help, like that are basically the width of the gap in the device and stuff like that. The like visual width.
I think you have to do that. Isn't it? I would be mad because I remember thinking about this before. I remember we had an episode where I like had a dream about foldables. It was weird.
Oh, really? Okay. I don't remember.
I think we
that,
talked to Jen about like, it and I was like, isn't it weird that like the CSS people are working on like multiple panel media queries when, you know, where's our container queries kind of thing. And she made this good point. That's right. Like, these aren't just like, they're not the same people. That's not how priorities work. Like these things need to get done too. In fact, it's very responsible of a company to not just like roll out new hardware and not have thought about the CSS implications of it. The fact that these things like exist and even have polyfills before the hardware is even in people's hands is like actually pretty cool.
Yeah, no, it's kind of miraculous. I mean, like, so I'm using a Windows emulator right now to like pull up my site, and it's actually my site looks terrible on it. Cause like the way I have, like I have a 7-column grid and that doesn't split over two screens very well. You know, my content column is in the middle of the screen. So like it, there's, it's kind of messed up, you know? And I think like, there's a lot of like, oh, what it, you know, at least in my brain, like, I think Windows has to figure out like how this is going to work, or the Surface team, you know, because not everything really works in like a double screen mode. But I do have that like drawing app I made, Prompts. I like, it's like an Inktober-y kind of drawing app. It's on a subdomain, prompts.davereaper.com. But I went through and I made that work on dual screens. So it's like now a full dual screen app. And, it's kind of cool. It's just sort of like, I mean, it was very simple, like 10 lines of CSS or something, but it like now works on two screens. It's a PWA. So there you go. So I made it work. And what's cool is like, if you have CSS grid working underneath the hood, like all it is like sleight of hand. You just make a grid, like basically look, you have a grid, but then the gap in your grid is based, just happens to line up with the gap of the device. That's all you do.
I love that. Yeah, exactly. That's CSS finally like coming together. Oh, it feels good, doesn't it? You know, when these features actually fuel each other in a good way.
Yeah. And then of course, like you want container queries because now I don't care about the viewport. I care about which viewport. Like I only care about the parent size. Like I don't care about the whole viewport size because the whole viewport size has a big seam in the middle. I don't care about that. I only care about the like the parent context. So hopefully it's some fuel to get container queries shipped eventually. So
yeah.
Anyway,
I don't know what to say about that. That's such a fascinating saga to follow, that it's like everybody, you know, at least for once, the browsers are like, we know, but at least we acknowledge it, that, you know, the kind of the desired need for this kind of thing. And I'm still confident that it will happen, but there was one little like moment of hope where, you know, that was the syntax where you, on a per property basis, you can kind of change the value of it, and that kind of got a little further, because I don't know, the implementer people saw it and were like, yeah, that looks doable, which was a very kind of positive thing. But, you know, maybe not as cool as what we want, because what it's nice to set is a whole block of properties based on a particular breakpoint, not just one. But, oh, well, you know, we can polyfill that away. That seems possible. But then the vibe at the time was like, just wait, this is one possibility, and there's another one coming from David Barron. Just wait and see that, and then we'll kind of compare and contrast. I don't think we ever got that second one to look at.
Not officially. I think it was leaked semi-leaked from the whatever, the annals of like the dark web of GitHub issues or whatever.
Yeah, but it's probably a Discord.
I don't think it's out. It's on a Discord now, or whatever, discourse. That's what they use over at the web incubator community.
Do they? Interesting.
The forum software. Anyway, so I'm experimenting with this. It's this. I'll have a post here actually today, so it's kind of just dumb fun. But it's I don't know. Two part post. One part's going to be just making my little app, you know, writing 11 lines of code, and then the next post is going to just be all big thoughts about this whole dual screen stuff. So
yeah, depends on how big it is, you know. Like, do you put, like, let's say it's a long form article, could you put the table of contents over there? Does that make sense, or is it like that's too much space for something like that, or what?
Yeah, that would be cool. Or like, you know, you pull up like cnn.com, like, you know, they put that big masthead ad at the top, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, have you been to you maybe you have an ad blocker, so you're fine. But it's like Polygon, Verge does this too. It's like 800 pixels of thing, and then like you scroll and the screen jitters and the video disappears to the bottom, or, you know, it's like this, just, it's just a cluster mess of problems. But I'm just like, if you had a dual screen, like, sure, make one page an ad and then make the other side like the content. I don't care about, you know, like, if the whole point is to get an eyeball, just chuck it on that whole screen and make the rest of the page work fine. That's all I care about.
Or if it's a podcast app, we can put the podcast player on one side and the time jump links, and then the content on the other.
Yeah.
That'd be cool.
And the content on the other side. Like, you'd have like, there's lots of, you know, just stuff you could do. Like, in just terms of, it adds a whole new dimension of how you might like split your information hierarchy. The one bummer is like, one, they're equal, you know, they're equal hierarchies, like the same size screen. So like, you have to think about that too. You know, how do you make something two screen?
Yeah. That's what I meant about the table of contents. Is that too little for one side? You know, like, you need.
Yeah, it might be, but it also might be like perfect for like navigating. You know what I mean? Like, where am I? Like, in this, how long is this post? But I'm scrolling and that keeps highlighting, so I feel pretty good, you know? Like, that might be cool. So, I don't know. That's something I'm experimenting with.
Nice. Yeah. Grid is great for it. They're match made in heaven. So, speaking of Grid, Code Swanson writes in here, what's the deal with Masonry layout and pure CSS Grid? Is it possible, or does it require calculating with JavaScript, or some kind of like, do you need class names from the server side to really do it right, or what, you know? He's looking at Unsplash and trying to figure out their kind of Masonry layout. Masonry does often look nice with grids of photos, doesn't it? Because it, the staggered different dimensions of photos kind of look cool that way.
Yeah, you need good graphics. I mean, because it has to be scannable, right? If you do text heavy text heavy stuff, you know, your eyeballs are going all over the place, and it's probably going to be exhausting. But yeah, good, with good images, I think it'd be great. What I know right now, you know, you can use David DeSandro's awesome masonry plugin.
Yeah. And he's got like three of them. So careful, you know, there's like the new one and then the old one and then the old powerful one.
And he's good at JavaScript and stuff. So like, definitely I would outsource that. Like, don't roll your own per se. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you could in theory do it, but I would probably wouldn't roll your own. I would just use David's. But there's sort of like two futures here. There was a proof of concept in Houdini. I don't know if you saw that. And it's like 50 lines of JavaScript in Houdini code, which is CSS Houdini is like the ability to control the layout of CSS. And they basically recreated Houdini or masonry in like 50 lines of JavaScript that, you know, comes down with your code. So you may get a little bit of a flash of unmasonry content, you know, just because all that stuff runs later. But that would be like how I would approach it. But then just before she left Firefox, I think Jen Simmons was working on display masonry, like as a, like they had a proof of concept of
I think it was display grid. CSS. It was display grid and then grid template. Columns masonry or something like that. The masonry keyword was applied to a grid layout, which was interesting. And then there was some negative sentiment towards it. Like even Rachel Ander was kind of like, I think that's a weird mixing of concepts that is probably like, that's fine that it exists, but it probably shouldn't be mingled with grid.
Right. I think there's accessibility problems too, which is would be my only like pushback for like why it maybe shouldn't show up in CSS, you know, itself. Like I feel like that should be opt-in bad accessibility.
Let me go on my rant for 2 seconds with this because this accessibility is part of it. So when you think masonry, what you often are thinking of is ragged bottoms. Not ragged middle edges. Ragged bottoms are the hard part. And what I mean about that is that, like, there's no horizontal slices through your content. There's vertical slices through your content. And hopefully you can picture that. But that makes it harder. So I want to point that out because if you're okay with different widths all equaling perfectly the same with rows, but, you know, and having no vertical slices down your code, it also looks like a brick wall. And I'd argue it looks more like a brick wall because brick walls are staggered horizontally, like a picture of brick wall. There's horizontal lines you can run your finger down, but no vertical lines, right? They're staggered in that way. That's a lot easier to do. So if you like that look, and that would be okay for your photo gallery or whatever, which I would argue is probably fine. You can do that with Flexbox. In fact, look at the Tim Van Dam post on CSS tricks. It covers how to do that really, really nice with just a couple of lines of CSS. That's a great approach. But let's say you're like, no, I want the ragged bottoms instead. That's the more traditional masonry look. And that's what's so hard to do. That's a lot harder to pull off. Then you got to ask yourself, do I care about source order? Because if you don't really care about source order, then you can use CSS columns, which is also just a handful of lines of CSS and very easy to do. That would mean, though, that if you're in like a normal RTL kind of layout, that on the upper left is number one, and then below it is number two, and then below that is number three. And then there's a column break. So maybe in column number two, all of a sudden you're at five or six. So now the tabbing order of this thing goes up and down and then over a column and then up and down and over. Maybe that doesn't matter. Maybe that's fine. So what masonry tries to solve, though, is ragged bottoms, the hard one, but with a loosely left to right source order still. So you want the ragged bottoms, but you want 1, 2, 3 across left to right. And then when it breaks, what's the next number? Well, it just feels logically like it should be, like it's the next tallest one up the stack, you know? And as you go down, it just starts to get a little funky. Like if you want left to right tabbing in a ragged bottom masonry layout, it's going to be weird. There's no perfect way to handle left to right with staggered blocks, but it attempts to do it. And so all these things, even the Houdini one that Dave mentioned, it's still going to be a little weird tabbing wise. It's going to try to generally get left to right, but the ragged bottoms just ruin it. There's no perfect way to do it anyway. So I'm just saying, I don't know, look at the options. So if you say just masonry, it doesn't just have one meaning. It could be ragged bottom, ragged left, ragged right, you know. And there's only one hard one, which is the ragged bottom with LTR source order. And if you absolutely need that, then you're in the JavaScript weirdness territory of trying to find a solution to it. And there are some interesting CSS grid-based ones. I mean, if you Google CSS masonry layout, you probably will find an article on CSS tricks. And there is one in there that has a couple of that hard combo I've mentioned ideas. And one of them is it lays them out with rows with arbitrary heights and then uses like it calculates what kind of negative margin each one needs to like suck it back up from the row that it's currently on to make it look like it has a ragged bottom. It's pretty clever, you know, and it is lighter weight than using a full-blown David DeSandro library is. So you could look at something like that. What's cool about David DeSandro's is, you know, it's got the resizing built in. So you resize and they'll magically float to their new location and all that fancy stuff that a little lightweight solution won't have. But, you know, it does a pretty good job. I'd say the last demo on that page does a pretty good job with masonry. Actually, I don't know, a whole bunch of them do really. So it's worth checking out. But
I was going to say, if you have like a fixed number of photos, I mean, it depends on your photo site, you know, like, if you have a fixed number of photos, like I would just do the like CSS columns one because it gets the effect pretty cheaply, you know. Like if you have like infinite, it might get kind of wild.
That's a good point.
Infinite scroll wise, but like that's just me. But I think like too, if you're you could do some really cool stuff with grid and object fit like CSS grid, because you could almost just like JavaScript randomize the like let's say a 12 column grid, and the cells could either be spanning 2 or spanning 3 or spanning 4, and like you just kind of like mess with that and do CSS grid, and maybe people have to click through to see the whole photo because they would anyway in a masonry thing. Mm-hmm. Like there's a lot of cool tools you can like experiment with, and mainly grid and object fit. You can make some pretty cool stuff if you like where to work with that.
Yeah. I like that thinking. I'm just going to say it one more time, because if you care about this and are listening to this, there is a lot of masonry looking things, choices that are easy to pull off. And only a couple of lines ago, to not a big deal. There's only one combination of masonry that's hard, which is the ragged bottoms with left to right source order. And if you just don't, like, I think a lot of masonry thinking is based around that. And there's a lot of reasons why you don't need that. So, I don't know. So don't pin all your thinking about masonry on the hardest possible one. Like, consider what the other options are, too. And then only if you need that very hard combination, then look at the libraries.
And Chris, this I feel like you just applied all your ceramics degree, you know? You just really just masterclass in ceramics here.
Thank you.
You don't even need it.
People talk about masonry as if it's one thing, and it's not. All right. Yeah. All right. Well, how much time do we got? None.
I think we have negative minutes, so we should power it down. Hey, it's good to be back. We did kind of just a small break, but I think we're back here and kind of, summer travels or like in Corona times, those are kind of winding down here. So hopefully we'll, kind of settle back into the groove here, the show. And, so thank you always, dear listener, for listening. We appreciate it. Download this in your podcatcher choice, our heart favorite up. That's how people find out about this show. Follow us on Twitter at Shop Talk Show, tens of tweets a month. If you want to get a new job, go to shoptalkshow.com/jobs and get a brand new one, because people want to hire people like you, even in this economy, hopefully. And Chris, do you have anything else you'd like to say?
Nah, shoptalkshow.com.